Welcome to the Hop and Brew School podcast. I'm Justin Crosley.
I'm Nick Ziegler.
And we are back to teach you more about hops, as always. Hop and Brew School is the podcast to connect the world's finest brewers and homebrewers with more knowledge about hops so that we can all drink better beer. And today's show is no exception. Today we're going to talk about sour beers and hopping, right, Nick?
I have been excited about this one for a long time, and I am particularly honored to have the guests that we have on the show right now.
Yeah, we got a great lineup today. Mr. Vinny Chalurzo from Russian River Brewing Company is here. Welcome, Vinny.
Hello. Good to be back.
Some of you might know Jay Goodwin from our other podcast here on the Brewing Network, also from the Rare Barrel. Hey, Jay.
Hey, excited to be on the BN.
And I think for the first time in the studio, Charlie Johnson from the Ronin Fermentation Project.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Pretty excited to be on this side of the camera.
We got a good crew here, and we're going to talk all about sour beers and hopping. I do have to admit one thing. Apparently, and I didn't know this because I've known Vinny for a long time, but apparently he makes me nervous. I had a nightmare last night about Vinny coming to the Hop Grenade. And he had come in and went to put some beer in my cold box and told my team, "Your cold box is disgusting." And my team immediately started ripping apart our entire draft system in the middle of a busy service hour. And they're taking it apart. I come in. I say, "What are you doing?" They said, "Vinny said it's disgusting." And Vinny comes back 15 minutes later. Everything's in pieces. And he goes, "I was just messing with you guys." Your cold box is fine.
Oh, dude, I'm so sorry you're getting stressed about this stuff.
Anxiety dreams, right?
Anxiety dreams, you know? Medication, beer.
Beer is my medication.
Yeah, it works for me.
Vinny doesn't actually give me anxiety all the time. I'm always happy to have you in here. And so thanks for coming down.
I remember the early days.
That's right. Vinny's been in my garage, for heaven's sakes.
And you're back up your bedroom, at one second bedroom at one point.
Absolutely.
I remember correctly. Those were the early days of the Brewing Network.
That's right. Oh, how far we've come. And then just one more thing I just wanted to mention, because you sent me a photo of it earlier today, but you filled your, was it your first fill of your cool ship today?
No, we've done it about eight times, but it
in
was
the new
just,
brewery,
it
right?
Was, yeah, it was just appropriate that we were putting wort in the cool ship, and we're doing it again tomorrow.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Fantastic.
That is so cool.
So I was actually, I had the privilege of going to visit Vinny at the new brewery in November, I think, was it? And, you know, in my excitement, I was you know, hanging around Vinny and Natalie in this wonderful new brewery that had just opened, and I'm there with the entire board of the company, and I stick my head in and then kind of crawl halfway in and looking at it and checking out the finish, and everybody's like, "What the fuck is this guy doing?" And I'm kind of, you know, mumbling around in there, and it turns out that I deposited a significant quantity of hydrogen sulfide and hydrogen sulfoxide in the closed environment just before my CEO and all of the board members decided to take a look inside as well. So, whoops.
Nice work.
So if the first batch is sulfury out of that one, I apologize.
Yeah.
Thankfully, we haven't put beer in it yet.
Okay, perfect.
Ventilate it, please.
Perfect. Well, why don't we dive into it, because I know that we have a lot to cover today. But the idea is that there are, I think, some different hopping techniques for sour beers. And some people know the kind of easier traditional techniques about using aged hops and using less hops. But I do think that sour beer has evolved quite a bit, especially here in the U.S. So we thought that it merited an entire episode to talk about what some of the best sour brewers in the country are doing. So where do you want to start, Nick?
All right. So I think from the beginning here, with the expertise that we have, I'd like to just quickly take a quick survey over the types of sour beers. And I know that sour beers is a catch-all term, and most traditional sours and the really complex, lovely ones are sort of the real sours. But I think there is some value in talking about kettle sours a little bit. So there's two types of kettle sours. You can get them, you know, microbially soured, either from a sour mash or in the kettle, and then boiled. Or you can add some, you know, acid species like citric acid and phosphoric acid and lactic acid later on down the line. Then you get the mixed cultures, where you get this wonderful sort of controlled commercial pitches of multiple strains of microbes that work together to produce a very complex sour profile. And then you can either combine them sequentially, one at a time, either start with a sac and then add some lacto and then some PDO and then some Brett, or, you know, start in any order, really. or you can have them all at the same time and have this sort of wonderful co-fermented product. On the other side of that is you can get the, as I call it, bottle thievery, or the homage, as Jay said, which is, you know, you get dregs from wonderful things like Consecration and the Toronado 25, which is still to date, Vinny, thank you very much for that. About 9 years ago, you gave us a bunch of those, and I had a barrel running for about 7 years with that in, and it was real interesting. And that's where you basically take the cultures of an established beer and that are still alive and get them going in your own fermenter, either stainless or barrel or what have you, or concrete. And they come out wonderful, and I love that way because you can tweak your ways, saying, okay, well, I like what Chad's got going on, I like what Jay's got going on, I like what Vinny's got going on, but I want to have some of what Jester King's going on, so I'm going to pitch that earlier or later, and you can do all this weird sort of stuff, and they all kind of normalize eventually because they get into this, you know, this equilibrium, and this is a concept that we've talked about a lot already. And then there is the spontaneous fermentation, which I like to describe as a formerly trained brewer in the British or Germanic tradition as utter madness. Violate every rule of beer making in the traditions that you have been taught, let it go, and then rely on the flora and the character and the complexity of what's around you in your environment. And in general, those are also amazing. I've never actually had a regionally bad one. If people are doing it right with the right techniques. No. So not bad due to the region so much as technique, I guess. Okay. So as this is a hop show, looking at all these types of sour beers, I would like to get these, you know, three gents' expertise on hops in the role of sour beer maker. So how do we use them? What are they contributing to this wonderful complexity, which is insane in terms of biochemistry and analytics and sensory? It's huge. It's incredibly voluminous and very complex. So
Why don't we start with the basics even of that question? Like, what role do hops play in sour beers? Vinny, what do you think?
Well, I think look at this twofold. In a conventional barrel-aged sour beer, which is what we mostly do,
okay,
we just made our first ever kettle sour beer. We did it so ass backwards. We went did it the hard way
first.
How many years now? Like 20 years?
Yeah.
Almost 20 years since 1999 when we made our first barrel beer out at Korbel. And now we're doing, you know, a kettle sour,
okay,
which I'm loving. But, you know, they're often in the traditional method of using hops is that it really is a way to control the bacteria. That the more hops you add, because the lactobacillus oftentimes doesn't like to play with the hops and is inhibited by the hops. So,
okay.
But that's not every strain of lacto either. So, I mean, that's what I love about these beers is that there's always a, well, it's this, but it can be that.
Yeah.
And it does. And that's why it's so great for homebrewers too, is that there are no rules.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the normal use of hops, and you know, that's the whole idea of aging hops for spontaneous beer. But we use aged hops in all of our barrel aged beer, Temptation, Supplication,
I see,
Consecration. We use aged hops in everything. So we have a whole aging hop program. We hit up, like a couple years ago, I hit up Yakima Chief. I'm like, what do you have that's old? Like $4 a pound? That's too much. I want, like, even older than that.
Yeah,
that's, I like, mean, I real think old. They got some dollar a pound stuff.
give me the dollar a pound.
Yeah, like, send me to the dollar store of hops,
yeah,
please.
I want, well, like the junkyard hops, you know.
So actually, that's a wonderful thing for you to have brought up is that I would like to know what you all are looking for in these aged hops, because we're actually trying to, you know, trying to specify and identify this stuff. And mm-hmm. I think we're pretty well along the way, but instead of giving you the dollar store hops, and they're still going to be inexpensive, don't worry, Vinny, but they are, it's more about getting you what you want.
What are you looking for?
Don't worry about me. I got breweries giving me hops now, old hops.
Is that right?
Yeah, a couple years ago, and then Kasi sent me like 4,000 pounds of hops.
Wow.
On pay shipping. So.
Wow.
Thanks, Jamie.
We personally don't look for like IPA hops. We don't want to use old Simcoe, Cascade. Personally, I just think they give a flavor that I'm not into. Not saying it's not possible, but for me personally, I'm kind of old school when it comes to hops. So we're looking at, you know, German, English varieties, that sort of.
So you're looking for them to
be European cultivars. So American hops, like maybe Mount Hood or Liberty or that sort of thing. Not that there's a lot of Liberty grown anymore. Just the hop that came to mind, you know.
And why the? Because you're looking for them to be transparent in the beer, or are they not transparent? Just not with those other strong flavors.
To me, they age better, and okay. they don't go to the negative flavors that in the beer that Cascade or some of those IPA type hops have. I don't know if it's the high myrcene hops or what, but just European cultivars. I don't know. I'd be curious to hear what these guys have to say.
What do you think, Charlie?
Well, I was going to say some of the New World varieties are high in myrcene and geraniol and some of these really, really nice terpenes, right? That if we don't know what terpenes are the part of the hop that's giving us a lot of that aroma and that flavor. You hear cannabis people talking about terpenes all the time. Well, terpenes are huge in brewing. Sorry,
Vinny's getting out beer.
Vinny's getting beer out. Yeah. We consequently are looking for hops, and there's not a lot of data. We've started at our brewery doing some GCMS studies, and we basically like all of our aged hops at 0.5 beta and 0.4 alpha. The old world varieties just seems like the terpenes age nicer, and there's not as much like isovaleric acid, that cheesiness. And I think it might be to just how the terpenes are degrading and how they oxidize, and we go through some chemical pathways that I don't want to bore you with right now.
Well, some people might like to hear them. But I'm just trying to get even a basic I'm glad that you're saying all this because you are helping me out. The first thing the reason an aged hop is because the alpha acids have degraded? Is that the initial purpose of an aged hop?
I think that, and then the oxidized alpha acids also have a easier solubility
significantly
in the wort.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. Jay, what's your take?
Yeah, just since we're on the aged hop train, I guess, you know, we use mostly fresh hops with pellets, but we certainly use aged hops just anecdotally from other breweries. We try to use whole cone more than pellets. Some people report just a little bit higher, phenolic finish on some of those beers. And so we're happy to take their word for it with our significantly less experience with that. What we're looking for is just maybe more from like a sensory perspective, more of just like a clean kind of hay, very neutral experience when you're kind of, you know, rubbing the hops, the aged hops between your hands. But incidentally, we're on our second year of brewing a spontaneous beer, and the first year's beer is actually turning out pretty nicely about a year into it, but it's more sour than we expected. And so there's like a widely cited 1 pound per barrel of whole leaf aged hops.
Okay.
And that's what we used. And I was just really surprised at the recommended kind of middle spot didn't restrain the acidity. Because we, on the sour hour, had talked about some breweries that started at 0.8 and then and then they were too sour. And then some were at 1.2 and then it was not sour enough. And that kind of framed how I thought about it. And now I'm hearing a lot of breweries say, oh, one's not nearly enough. And now there's breweries doing 1.5 and 2. And even, again, this anecdote, I won't name them because maybe they're coming on the sour hour in a few weeks. But 3 pounds. Some of their beers are 3 pounds per barrel of aged hops. And that's what they find for their brewery. So I'm trying to learn a little bit more about it and be a little more open-minded, because previously I had thought that there was a really narrow range on at least the hopping rate that you would use. But one thing I'm really interested in when it comes to the aged hops is I wonder, and I've always felt a little bad about saying this, but and it's kind of like a brewer's blaspheme, where what percentage of traditional Belgian lambic and or goose, what percentage of that flavor that we all love from those beers is actually coming from aged hops. Hmm. So I'm not just interested in using aged hops in spontaneous beers per se, but, you know, I think, you know, Vinny was mentioning off air that that you had fermented an open top Saison. I think that would be a great candidate to have aged hops in and then age out with mixed culture and barrels. There's so many options.
It's a good question because it goes away from the using hops just for a preservative quality. Mm-hmm. Vinny, what do you think a flavor contribution is, and how, you know, if you could put a percentage on it, as Jay is kind of asking?
So we're to talk about quantities to make Cynambic, our spontaneous beer. I just ran some quick numbers. We're at about 0.87 to 0.9 pounds per barrel of wort. So it's actually under the 1 pound. Which is I've widely heard that as a number being thrown around. I think the flavor that it contributes is this nice earthy, herbaceous, and sometimes ours do have a cheesiness. We don't measure ours; ours is all done sensory. We use both aged pellets and whole cone to make Cynambic most of the time. Mm-hmm. Pellets to do temptation, supplication, consecration. But with that said, for temptation, supplication, consecration, we're also bittering with warrior hop extract that we get from Yakima Chief.
So
that was a good plug, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. That was a great plug. Thanks for that, dude.
Well done.
So in there, we're mixing like fresh hops. So, you know, warrior extract is like 60 alpha or whatever the concentrated.
63 usually, but
63, yeah. And then that's the first, the bittering hop addition. And then we're doing a big charge of aged hop at the end. So there we're mixing it. So, you know, one of the reasons that Belgian lambic brewers use aged hops is to control the acidity, as we've already said, and it'll suppress, you know, some of the bacterial growth. But with that said, we're kind of adding in this layer of traditional, almost IPA brewing using extract in the beer to gain bitterness. And so, again, it goes back to what I'm saying. There is no right or wrong rule. We started doing that early on just because I wanted to be able to control the bitterness in our three main base beers, and that was the whole purpose of saying, okay, we want to get to about 15 to 20 BUs for those three main base beers, and then we're going to let the aged hops be the flavor component to it.
Okay.
But to me, it was really important to control the bitterness of the beer because if you have a highly acidic sour beer – that's got a lot of bitterness, and then you add the CO2 on top of it. To me, that's going to be a train wreck of flavors, you know, unless you back sweeten the beer and you blend in some beer to soften it up some.
So, I see.
But I throw the caveat, I've still not had a sour IPA, so I'm staring at Jay right now, who supposedly is making one, I hear.
Possibly after the break.
So let me reframe this question, because I think we can at least wrap up maybe this part of it with that. I love that you're giving out this tip to control the bitterness and by using extract. I think that's amazing. And then you're saying that you're using aged hops, a charge at the end, for flavor. So I want to ask you what flavor you think that's adding. And at the same time, Jay, I want you to think about, you mentioned that you actually use fresh hops mostly. You've only just started using a bit of aged hops. So I want to ask you the same thing. You know, why and what flavor contribution do you think that gives? So what do you think I'm tasting in your beer from this charge of aged hops?
I mentioned like herbal, herbaceous notes, but I actually think it's less about direct, exact flavors, and it's more about balancing out other flavors, or maybe not balance is the wrong word, maybe just being harmonious with, you know, like supplication with the malt, with the cherries, with the tannins from the oak, you know, and everything else. I just think it's one component that maybe you can't pick out per se.
Yeah.
And for us at Russian River, I'm not, right now, we're not making sour beer that has a really big hop component. I think maybe that we're kind of old school,
yeah,
in that sense, and you know, let these young whippersnappers come up and make these new styles.
We love our hops for sure. Yeah. I think what I get out of it is, as I kind of alluded to earlier, some percentage of that indescribable goose lambic character. Now, again, to be clear, this is not that style of beer. And I know anyone who's sophisticated and classy enough to listen to this podcast
right.
already knows this whole story, but you know, the spontaneous beer that we're making in the United States is not that beer. I just think some of the aged hops and aged hop techniques that we're using can replicate some percentage of that indescribable flavor that we get in those beers, which I have interpreted myself, depending on the blender or brewer, as somewhere in between like cedarwood or diesel, which I mean that in the best way, like... Mm-hmm. I think diesel smells good.
That's heavy thiol concentration in the wort, giving that kind of like diesel.
And Charlie's weird. The rest of us say thiols, but he says thiol.
I say it all wrong. Just
we could do a whole segment on that.
I also say Saran wrap.
You're wrong.
He's an aluminium guy. yeah, and then just kind of that. What I describe as like Pez candy, almost like a chalky citrus thing. Which I love, again. I love all these
vitamin C tablets.
Yeah, exactly. So all these things kind of come in, and I think they're produced by these spontaneous cultures and that fermentation, but also a lot of the aged hop. So I find them in both of those processes, but I don't think necessarily you have to do one or the other. I'm very interested in what is a spontaneous beer with fresh pellets, mm-hmm. not necessarily like new American hops, but how about just noble type hops? And then what is a Brett Saison or mixed culture Saison with aged hops, and which one is more like lambic or goose? And not that that's the goal to like
mimic,
try and make it faster or cheaper or anything like that. It's just a different style of beer. And I think a lot of what defines American sour beer is really a lot of new techniques and experiments.
I'll have a beer for you in 3 weeks that we fermented with. Well, I wouldn't call it conventional yeast, but with aged hops. So when we make Cynambic, our spontaneous beer at the new brewery, mm-hmm. Our brew house, technically 75-barrel cold wort knockout. We'll bring it down to about 70-barrel, and then we'll send about 25 to 30 barrels of wort to the cool ship to cool overnight. But that leaves us with a remaining, 40 barrels, let's say, of wort that needs to be fermented. So we put it into our single-batch funky tank. Why we do two batches 2 days in a row to then be able to maximize that. But then we end up with literally like 70-ish, 80 barrels of what we would call orphan beer, which goes into barrels. But you can only make so much orphan beer for topping, for blending. So we are using Kvike yeast for the first time today.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's with aged hops because the wort stream is 100%.
Get on the breaking news.
So, yeah. Kvike yeast.
Yeah.
It's like the
Vinny's the only one who gives me scoops. So this is great.
So I mean, here's going to be a beer that's fermented with Kvike yeast at 98 degrees, but it's all aged hops.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And
I thought that was crazy for going to 90.
So it's going to be a sign of what, and we may even dry hop it.
Oh, no. Oh my God. Russian River dry hopping a beer? No.
So we'll see. Awesome. We'll see where it goes, but it will be a pseudo, a non funky fermentation with aged hops.
Okay. Oh, so. Vinny, please send me some for the lab. But I gotta actually interject here, guys, and ask you guys a question, which is that so you're talking about this age hop character and this the noble character here. What I would be really interested in seeing is the starting oil and alpha values of what you consider a good addition, because a lot of the traditional stuff has been off-gassed for quite a long time, and they've been aged, pre-aged before they even get to the brewery, and then they're aged even more. So you're losing a lot of the volatiles and stuff like that. So if you're talking about killing your microbes or inhibiting the microbes, the lactose specifically in some of the PDO strains, using your non-aromatic hops, if you start with a more aromatic U.S. variety, and like you said, that you tend to get some of the off flavors from the aged U.S. varieties. As someone who's in the hop industry, I would hypothesize that it is basically just due to the fact that there's a lot more of those oils and of those compounds in a lot of these U.S. aromatic varieties. Whereas you said Mount Hood varieties and Willamette and stuff like that are a lot better. They're much lower oil. They're much lower alpha and beta. So just
I think there's more left over. I think
there's more left over after the age. And also there's more left over that has been oxidized and changed in weird ways. Mm-hmm. So that would be something that we should definitely talk about and look at. So
you'd have to pick your favorite one. You know, this batch came out perfect. Know where that stuff's been sitting and for how long in order to send it to a lab, right? Like you'd really have to then, yeah, this one was my favorite.
Please do.
We've got some 4 to 5, now 5.5-year-old Cascades from a brewery that I won't name, so you don't ask them for the same hop.
Right.
I'll just say they've been aging in a barn.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's a question, just a simple question I have for you guys. Once you guys get these hops, how do you age? How are you storing them? I mean, obviously, you don't care if they're in your refrigerator anymore. What do you do?
No, one thing that we found at Russian River is that you really need to open the bags up. It's pretty incredible how the Mylar bags that hop pellets mm-hmm. going on or whole cone hops that are in Mylar. It's amazing how good they hold even at room temperature. I mean, trust me, it's not stuff you'd want to make IPA with.
Yeah.
But we've opened bags, Mylar bags that are a few years old and be like, geez, they're still really green. They're not even brown.
Wow, yeah.
They haven't changed all that much. So first thing is open them up. So we store them in big micro bins. They're, you know, the things I see them all around Sonoma County being grapes picked into. We've got
oh, yeah.
a bunch of those, and we stage them.
Okay.
So they're rotated through.
I see.
We store them in our boiler room. Our boiler room at the new brewery is not warm. It's very well ventilated. So it's actually the coolest boiler room I've ever been in. But if you do want to super quick age your hops at a brewery, you can literally put them in your boiler room. We've done that in the past, and they quick age.
Okay.
Or at home next year or on top of your hot water heater or something like that, or on top of your fridge or
okay.
that
top
sort
of the fridge
of thing.
Is a good one.
That's actually a really good way to super age, quick age your hops to if you want to get to using, you know, aged hops.
Yeah.
So. On top of the walk-in.
As a suggestion, yeah. though, if you are going to try to age T90 pellets or any sort of pellets, break them up first. So stick them in a coffee grinder if you're going to try to age them, because the pellets themselves actually the outer layer will oxidize, but the inner half or inner three quarters won't. So go ahead and grind them up if you're going to try to do that. It deeply hurts my soul because we try to make them good. But if that's what you're going for, do it. But also just call us up. We might have something for you.
We put them into burlap sacks.
Okay. Yep.
A little more airflow.
Traditional.
Yeah. Rustic as fuck.
And then they just sit with the rest of your barrels at the brewery.
We put them right in the tasting room, so we just look more awesome.
Let people sit on them.
I mean, we're in Berkeley. We're not really in a barn.
Right.
No, actually,
it's a industrial barn. Warehouse sale.
They're not in the tasting room.
A lot of barn aromas, though. Hipsters and...
Yeah, you get the same thing. Well, here's what I'm going to do. We're going to take a real quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about what happens to hop compounds inside sour beers, inside fermentation. Kind of dive into a little more of the chemistry. I'll let you guys take that. So,
Justin, do you mind if I do a tease also?
I don't.
We have some rare barrel sour IPA. Get some Vinny thoughts on the record.
Is that going to be his first taste of a sour IPA?
Yeah,
I don't know.
So this is like breaking news too.
My first sour IPA.
I feel like Adam Schefter of the beer world.
It kind of all comes down to if you like Nelson, because it's 100%.
Bevo, get the close-up camera ready. I want it right on Vinny's face so we can really know if he enjoys it or not. He won't be able to lie his way out of it.
Yeah.
All right, hang in there. It's the Hop and Brew School podcast, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Hop and Brew School podcast. We are hanging out with Vinny Chilurzo, Charlie Johnson and Jay Goodwin. We're talking about sour beers and hops. And before the break, of course, we were talking about aged hops and fresh hops, or new hops, rather. And I wanted to talk about some of the what happens in sour fermentation with hops, what the compounds do, you know, that might be different than in other beers. But quickly before we do that, Charlie had a great question at the break, wanting to talk about the noble hop varieties that you guys were mentioning.
Well, actually, it's American Noble.
American Noble, okay.
Which is kind of this product that Yakima Chief came out with that was a debittered hop pellet. We've started using it a little bit in kind of some Saison-type beers and or Saison Grisette slash whatever you want to call them, and other kind of mixed culture ferments. And I was wondering if either of you guys had worked with that product at all or what your thoughts were on it. Because it is – it's kind of like Yakima Chief started making a product that's like halfway there for the brewer that's looking for something that doesn't have as much alpha but still some of that old – world slash new world kind of terroir.
Okay.
So if we go back to it a little bit, just to remind people, the American Noble is the flip side of the cryo. So we've got the concentrated lupulin glands that have been separated from most of the brack material on the hops. And then the American Noble is the separated and concentrated leaf material. And so what you find is that a lot of the... A lot of the concentrated polyphenols and the concentrated enzymes and a lot of the concentrated other character that resides in that noble is there without the alpha and without the beta acids.
Mm-hmm.
So you still get a little bit of varietal character, but you're talking at an incredibly low alpha and beta levels. So it pretty much matches the spec that you guys were mentioning, or at least that Charlie mentioned earlier.
Sounds like an ideal sour beer hop.
And that was the idea. We were thinking, hey, this could actually work for people. So I'd really love people to try it. So
Jay, have you used it?
No, I'm interested though. I mean, it does get you kind of part of the way to the aged hop kind of concept.
But
I'm sure it would be very different at the same time, but certainly I'm interested in checking that out.
Vinny, you use them?
Never used it. I literally have like 10,000 pounds of aged hops right now.
Okay, yeah, so you've got...
So like, I'm kind of good on that front.
Charlie, you have used them?
Yeah, I actually brought one beer that we have it in as well, but I liked them quite a bit. I felt like we were really able to control our bittering units, kind of how Vinny mentioned earlier with the Warrior.
We're
doing something really similar with the American Noble, trying to kind of dial in bittering units. But
And it doesn't, what I was talking about earlier, it doesn't have to be extract.
Okay. You know,
especially if there's a home brewer listening. It can be pellets, fresh pellets.
It'd be like a Q-tip of extract.
Yeah, exactly.
Popsicle stick is
the one, but like the one thing when you look at the like, academia world talk about aged hops is that they do often talk about the beta acids not breaking down and decomposing, and that's really where the antimicrobial part of it lives in the hops. It's one of those things that's always been talked about, but I'm not sure if it's technically ever been studied. You know, it's one of those like those family stories that gets passed down from year to year, you know? It's like, I mean, seriously, and like when I started in the craft beer industry, first started homebrewing in the late 80s and then started my first brewery in the 90s, early 90s, like, it was like you mash for 1 hour for a single infusion. And then
you must boil 60 minutes
or 90 minutes or whatever it is.
You must have a boil addition.
And then one day Dr. Lewis at UC Davis is like, you know, the malt these days is so incredibly high in diastatic power that you're getting conversion literally instantly.
Wow.
And so we started working backwards and was like, now we mash for like 30 minutes.
Really?
It was like, you know, on the commercial level, if you're going to brew four brews in a day, it's like, I just shaved a bunch of time off.
That's a lot.
Granted, you start laying brews on top of each other, but I think you get the point that a lot of times we do things just because it was believed how it was done. And so I think that's the beauty of where we're at is looking at these different things and these different products. And I've always, do you know the hop tea maker?
Mm-hmm.
That's always been a really curious hop to me. Do you guys know Tea Maker? Tea Maker is a high beta, low alpha. It's like half a degree, 1 degree alpha acid, but can be as high as 8% beta. And so that's an interesting. It has this really unique tea quality to it. One of our direct contracts grows it,
and
it's been looked at actually in the agricultural world to feed to chickens. Instead of tetracycline as a antibiotic, they'll mix the tea maker hop into their feed to try to prevent bacteria and whatnot. It's a really curious hop,
and I believe it's also used as a methane suppressor in cattle in Europe.
Get it in the studio.
Well, the issue is it tastes weird. Get it into Vinny's fermenters where I left something.
Sounds brilliant.
Have
you brewed with it?
Homebrewed with it years ago.
Okay.
And it was a hack job on Pelotine and whatnot.
Okay.
Actually, the beer had this nice kind of tea quality to it. I didn't mind it. But I'm curious about maybe something unique like this in like the aged hop beer we're doing and see how it plays in. But this this other new what was it called? American Noble.
Yeah. So it's the flip side of that cryocide.
First time I've ever heard of it. Actually, I've been in a hole the last 2 years building a brewery.
Got to start listening to this podcast again.
Yeah, I got to say, Vinny, though, you have gained a person in at least 3 years since I saw you in November. Like not a person in size, but in terms of vivacity and life. Like
where are you going with this, Nick?
Sorry. I just meant that he looks stressed and really tired. Okay. Now he looks happy and good. The thing is that with the beta acids, they don't necessarily break down, but they do oxidize.
Yeah.
They still function.
I guess I should have said that, oxidized.
Mm. Yeah. But they still function in that antimicrobial way. And with the oxidized alpha and all that, you do get better solubilization. So at that point, the beta will start to contribute a significantly higher proportion of the bitter flavoring and mouthfeel.
One thing I kind of wanted to digress on, since we're talking about sour beers and hops, is actually the type of acid in the wort before it's going in to fermentation or the being dry hopped later on. Acids and alcohols ferment or oxidize, I guess, into ethyl esters, they're called, which create lots of different, anything from a tropical fruit to geraniol will break down into citronella, right? Or citronella.
Citronellol.
So yeah, citronellol. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so when we start looking at, certain hops and how they break down or compare with acids, depending on the acid that's in solution, you might have a different flavor or ester kind of.
Okay.
So when we talk about like biotransformation, we've heard that kind of come up a lot lately with Saccharomyces and the hazy IPAs.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of can have that same effect with different organic acids in our wort. So when we build beers that are going to go into barrels, we look at wort composition. So it's not just always dextrins and sugars. It's also what type of organic acids are going to be in there that are going to be kind of biotransformed by the Brettanomyces and then have a chance to bind up with the different hop polyphenols when you dry hop later on.
I see.
The beer that we just poured I apologize, it's not fully conditioned, is a Koji Brett beer.
So that's what I was going to say about it. Brett beer, but it's just not enough carbonation.
Yeah.
It's
okay. My cold box is filthy. Your beer's not, you know.
And Vinny was just messing with you on both sides, so come on.
But, yeah, so I guess one thing, I don't know how Jay and Vinny and Nick feel about the different types of acids, but we've been really working with trying to come up with different kind of acid compounds. So this one's a lot of citric acid from yellow koji fermentation on the barley. But, you know, obviously lactic acid from different souring processes is also going to just one of those things I always try to point out is word composition.
So, and then just so I understand, the acids that go into this, are you're putting them there? So is this like the difference between a kettle sour or adding lactic acid? Just to help me understand when.
Yeah, so I guess when we talk about kettle souring, I mean, the Germans have been kettle souring, and I'm using air quotes right now. They've been souring in the mash or creating acids far before we all got on Milk the Funk and started talking about kettle souring. So when I talk about acids, yeah, I'm talking about literally trying to manipulate our brewing equipment to create different organic acids in our wort. So when I look at sour beer, I'm lucky I got to listen to Jay talk to all these wonderful brewers, and I got to grow up drinking Russian River and stuff. So you have all these kind of people that influence you. So when we look at sour beer, we kind of are trying to layer it and look at all these kind of different components. So by creating citric acid, or like if homebrewer didn't want to use, go through the whole koji ferment, you know, buffering your kettle to a pH of 4.5 with grapefruit juice maybe instead of food grade lactic or phosphoric is going to create a different organic acid that's going to interact differently with Brettanomyces and the hop compounds later on down the road, I guess.
One of my not favorite, because I don't know if I've had it once or twice, but interesting quote, here's the air quote again, kettle sour, but it wasn't really, was Avery's Goza.
Yummy.
They use lime juice to get it. So they're technically not doing a kettle sour. And I thought that was a really cool, unique. And then it added this whole great layer of flavor to the beer. So again, you know, just thinking creative outside the box, home brewer, commercial brewer, just easily being able to pull some different acids.
Yeah.
Well, so this is what I think is has been really interesting for me as a brewer over the last couple of years, and also talking to you guys. And Charlie, we briefly talked about this earlier, is that there is it's really important to understand that sourness can be sort of described as a pH or as titratable acidity. And that TA, the titratable acidity, is going to reflect a little bit more of the complexity that is in your sour beer. But when you start looking at things like the balance of phosphoric acid to citric to malic acid, so I've had beers where people have intentionally added malic acid in a way that it's going to persist post-fermentation. So they're actually adding it after filtration and just before packaging to give it a little bit of a harsher bite, which is, you know, sort of mostly anathematic to most brewers' attitude. And it's really interesting to see what happens. In terms of kettle sours, like when I did some sour IPAs, what I found is that adding so the first one I did that was a kettle sour, and I used the time-honored tradition of dumping a bag of or suspending a bag of malt, of acidulated malt, into the kettle and souring it, and you know, honestly, 75% of the time that worked pretty well. Mm-hmm. You didn't get too much butyric or anything like that, but you did end up with, and this in Scotland, I was there at the time, and you would end up with a tremendously high level of citric acid being produced. And if I did the exact same thing about 300 miles south, I did not get that same production of citric acid. And this is from the same lot, same producer of this material, same not the same water, obviously, but that led me to believe that something else was going on. And that citric acid beer was, to my mind, far better than the exact same recipe I followed, you know, 300 miles south.
That's why I don't envy you, brewers. There's too many damn variables.
side note, this Rare Barrel Nelson Sour IPA is
I haven't tried
really
that yet.
Beautiful.
Yours, Charlie, though, it's interesting that Vinny mentioned the adding lime juice at Avery. Yours has like a lemon-lime kind of flavor to it.
Yeah, it's kind of got this like lemon citric thing. And so the yellow koji is a mutant variety of white koji, and it creates just tons of – it ferments citric acid. That's all it does. So paired that with a lot of high limonene and geraniol hops. There was the American Noble Citra, Normal Citra, and then Oregon-grown Centennials. So we're trying to kind of match those terpenes with the acids, and then it kind of tricks your brain into thinking you're eating a lemon.
I think it's a nice blend.
Yeah.
They go well together.
Thanks.
Where did your Oregon Centennials come from?
I think Crosby.
Those things are beautiful.
I love Crosby.
Of Crosby, a little tip of hat to Jennifer Crosby who passed away.
Cheers.
To Jennifer.
Jennifer.
Cheers, yo.
Big part of the Oregon hop scene.
Yes, big time.
Okay, and so now we're in our glass. We've got Jay's sour IPA.
Yes.
Is that what we have? And it's and Vinny's, you really never had a sour IPA? That surprises me.
No. I've been living in a hole the last, an 85,000 square foot hole the last.
It's a beautiful hole, though.
So.
The beautiful hole with many fermenters. Some of them are concrete.
Right.
This is great.
Well, it just smells like a great IPA. I haven't
like
tasted it yet, but the aroma is just,
No way I can win on this one, then. But this is a straightforward hazy IPA with 100% Nelson. And essentially, we do what every other brewery does to get that done. And we actually serve side by side in our tasting room the sour version and the clean beer version of this, which is really interesting for us to do.
But also hazy.
It's also same hazy.
Okay. So lots of like oats and wheat and
flour.
Not a crazy amount.
No.
A crazy amount
Bad
of hops. You know, the like that classic London 3 ale strain.
I was going to say this tastes like a London 3. So.
Tons of dry hopping, and London 3 kind of gets you home with the haziness. We do use oats, but it's nothing crazy. I think it's like 10,
so. Yours is yeast hazy, not protein hazy.
Yeah, definitely not protein hazy. Yeah. And then essentially at the end of it, we blend in barrel aged sour beer that is a similar finish in gravity. And we do advise people to drink this, you know, right away. But what gave us confidence to kind of cross that threshold is that we made a beer like this that was draft only. About a year more, or now more like maybe a year and a half ago, that we did just we have a small scale can seamer, and we put some in cans to see how they would hold up, because we thought maybe sometime in the future we would do something like this, and we do sell them in cans. And now I feel bad about saying this, but we had a big tasting about with tons of great beers, and I don't like to say this kind of thing, but. That 1 year old can was the best beer I had.
Is that right?
On the whole tasting. And I was just like, maybe we should do this. And everyone was like, yeah. we broke Jay down. It took 5 years.
Wow.
So Jay, this is actually a really interesting thing, is that so historically the literature says that higher pH is a more stable beer, but they're talking about bitterness. And they're talking about classic sort of clarity and shelf stability from the macro perspective. But what anecdotally and somewhat experimentally I've found is that aroma and flavor tends to persist quite well when there is a low pH. So like the sour IPAs actually hold their, you know, value for, I mean, up to a year and a half that we found at previous breweries that I worked at. And that was really interesting to me. And I'm trying to figure out what the mechanism is. I'm not sure if it's an antioxidant effect from the acids or what, but it's an interesting thing.
Well, I can't comment on the mechanism, but I would say actually you kind of switch the descriptor there. But I want to point out that, you know, thriving and persisting are two different things. So
good point.
Hops thrive at higher pH, and there's no doubt that the hoppy clean beer version of this beer is way hoppier. Like, just, and I've been going back, I have Blind Pig in front of me right now, and I've been going back and forth, because actually I don't think this sour IPA that we made is very sour at all. In fact, it
there's no sourness at all.
The pH is like 3.8.
Yeah, you can't taste it.
3.9.
Kind of going back to an old Sour Hour episode, right?
Yeah, and so what we've been trying to do is hit that sweet spot where it's perceptibly sour, which you can argue about, and we do internally quite a bit. But as we add sour beer, we're losing hop character for every little bit that we blend in.
I see.
So we're doing it very carefully, and then we hit a sweet spot. We taste it against the regular beer, which when you have them side by side, it's – and that's what I'm trying to do right now with Blind Pig. And I – you know, there's a
– that's –
Vinny, do you really think there's no sour at all in it?
I find it quite tart. It's lovely, but
it's amazing. The
I don't get a lot of acidity in it. No,
I find
the
it
range
pulls
of acidity.
Off.
That's what I meant. I'm sorry.
It's very interesting though, like because it. I'd say our overall target, and we've only done this two or three times, is probably a little more sour than it is right now, but not by much. But we want to find sour beer from our cellar that is more lactically acidic so we can blend in less volume.
Yeah.
And so we're getting to the acidity level that we want without losing the hops, because it's not doesn't correlate with how much volume we add. We probably do an 80-20 split, and the loss in hop aroma is 50% instead of 20%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's every little bit hurts us that we blend in to get to the appropriate acid level.
It's pretty hoppy.
I was going to say it's really hoppy. It's really hoppy.
I mean, Nelson it's a good choice of hops if you can continue to get this hop year round in good shape.
Which we will.
Like, I got 11 pounds.
We're a small producer, so we can just kind of go on the spot market.
I'm going to ask kind of a backhanded question, Jay. And
thank you.
It's because we're friends and I know that I can do this. But if sour IPAs were a good idea, wouldn't we use fresh hops in sour beers? In other words, aren't the same things that maybe we're trying to avoid by using aged hops is the reason there's never really been a sour IPA?
Well, you asked a few different questions. So.
I meant it to be one. Just one backhanded one.
So let me try to answer the thought behind your question by not answering your question.
Fair. Yeah.
So when we make these beers, we make them three ways. We make an IPA plain, and that's so all the hopping is at higher pHs, and the only time this beer exists in a sour format is right at the very end when we blend in sour beer.
Okay.
We've got the regular IPA, we've got this sour IPA, and then we take a portion of the sour IPA, and this is maybe where I make it. I'm not going to look at Vinny when I said this, but we send a portion of that of this beer into oak barrels for aging. And I've got to say, it's the number one thing I'm the most excited about in beer, period.
Okay.
Because those beers, you know, to something we talked about earlier, where they don't, like the hops aren't thriving, they are surviving and sustaining and transforming.
Yeah.
You could not mistake the fresh IPA for even this beer or the barrel aged version, but to that point of that year old can, and that, by the way, that was warm stored.
Okay,
and
interesting.
As it should be.
So really, different things are happening with that much hops.
It was gorgeous.
Yeah,
it was gorgeous, and there's so much there that we haven't uncovered, and I'm really excited about it.
Okay, good answer, Jay.
Thank you,
Charlie. You were going to chime in there.
Yeah, I was going to say sometimes Brettanomyces has the ability to kind of preserve hops a little bit. Not into the same fresh extent, but because of the biotransformation with different ethyl esters and things, you'll see, like, I love Brett Klausenii conditioned IPAs. Like, I don't, Brett C tends to be, or anomalous, it tends to be, I guess, a little more restricted on some of the phenols, and it's got a little nicer ester profile for me, at least personally.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it anecdotally preserve IPAs and transfer them into really beautiful beers. Going back to like Vinny's Kvik, I've seen a couple of really cool Nordic style IPAs or Kviks with like Moto Eker or something conditioned with Klausenii, and they're just like tropical fruit, slap you in the face.
Wow.
Beautiful. You'd never think they're a Brett beer, actually. And I don't know with your guys's, but some of the – we've tried to actually kind of start conditioning some IPAs to release way later on down the road.
All these IPA brewers, which, I mean, we're an IPA brewer, obviously.
Yeah. Right. All these?
No, yeah. Really?
All was it Pliny
the
something?
All of the new hazy IPA, they're talking biotransformation. For those of us that have been bottle conditioning with Brett for a long time.
Yeah.
This is nothing new.
Right?
Biotransformation, Brettanomyces is the original yeast catalyst that has the beta-glucoside enzyme in it. And it's not all Brett strains, but it's even less Saccharomyces strains that that. And so, anytime we make a Brett finished beer, when we made Toronado 30th, the Sonoma Pride line that we've done, Amasa Downhour, both dry hopped. We have another beer coming out that will be dry hopped with bottle condition with Brett. Anytime we bottle condition with Brett, we always dry hop that beer because the Brettanomyces is doing that very thing where it's not even preserving the hops, but it is the biotransformation. It's the glycoside effect that I always call it, where the glycosides are liberated via the yeast that you're using, and Brettanomyces is the best thing to do that.
I'll double down on that just because a quick summation of maybe everything we've talked about on the Sour Hour and at the Rare Barrel. We started knowing that some people struggle to produce acidity in their early sour beer programs, and that hurts them because then they age it for a long time, oxygen gets in, too much ethyl acetate, too much acetic acid. So we went one IBU, maybe not even, just like a sprinkling of hops for a long time. Culture got too strong, beer got too sour, so we needed to use drier primary fermentation yeast and more hops. And I think for a long time we made very clean sour beer, just free from off flavors, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And right when we started using more hops to control acidity, going back to one of the first questions we talked about on this show, we saw our Brett character in our beers rise dramatically.
Oh.
Using all the same cultures. And I really think you're right with what you're saying, Vinny, that hop yeast connection really started with sour beers, and that's where you get a lot of those wonderful yeast aromatics, even though a lot of them are from wild yeast.
That's why I always chuckle when someone's like, my Nipah yeast is super expressive. not that it isn't, but
yeah.
Let me introduce you to my little yeast called Brettanomyces.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things that I as a brewer have been struggling for a while, is that a lot of so even talking to the yeast providers and all that stuff, have you guys ever seen evidence that a Saccharomyces species actually does any biotransformation?
Well, it's funny. We talk about this all the time at the brewery. Is it that there's biotransformation, or is it the fact that you dry hop them with 5 fucking pounds of hops per barrel?
Exactly. And there's a major acid change.
This is no knock on anyone doing it, because we make a couple of hazy beers, and we just blew out of the second batch of Mind Circus in like a New York minute, and it was like, Jesus Christ, where did it all go?
Yeah.
In my belly.
And everybody's fave. Yeah,
But I do wonder if some of this is just pure quantity of hops and it's less about biotransformation. And what also hasn't been fully established, at least that I've seen, and maybe it's out there because I've been building the brewery for the last couple of years, is a list of all the main yeasts, and is it positive or negative for biotransformation.
Is it a G positive or a POF positive sort of idea? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's somewhere out there, but maybe not. I don't know.
I actually have a list what I consider biotransformation by yeast or reactions triggered by beer pH.
Data boy, Charlie.
Yes, and that is what I was leaning at.
He didn't turn on his phone. That's his background.
No, I did turn my phone on.
Yeah.
I had to take notes. I did have to take notes. But so we have glycosidically, Vinny mentioned, glycosides. So we have glycosidically bound aroma precursors, right?
Yes.
That's one. The other would be acids that are converted into ethyl esters is the second, and then esters that are transesterified or hydrolyzed, right? And
so, Charlie, you're going to have to back it down a little bit and explain what the last two mean.
You did look at Justin and said it, right?
And I'm like, yeah. Obviously, Charlie.
sorry. And, well, let's skip hydrolysis today.
No. Just explain what the result is. Flavor actively.
Okay, so
Sour Hour has been rescheduled for tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
But it relates directly with Brettanomyces.
Yes, these are all Brettanomyces related, and then monoterpene alcohols are isomerized as well, which would be the terpenes from the hops or your polyphenols from the hops interacting with the alcohols and the esters currently in your barrel. Or your stainless steel fermenter or your bucket at home.
In the liquid and changing.
In the liquid and changing. So kind of back to Vinny saying, you know, talking about I certainly have no, I don't know, information about Saccharomyces doing biotransformation, but Brett certainly does. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot. Brewing's cool because it's all autodidactic, which means we're teaching ourselves, right? There's not a whole lot of. But at the same time, that's kind of frustrating because there's not a lot of money backing some of this research and trying to.
Right.
I think hopefully there is now. The interesting thing about biotransformation is that, yes, there are Saccharomyces strains that are positive for beta-glucosides. But when you talk to or listen to other brewers, almost all of them talk about waiting after fermentation is done because they want to be able to pull the yeast and be able to reuse it. Whereas if you pitch your dry hop 1 or 2 days before the end of gravity, when your yeast is still active, molecularly active, which is what scientifically they say, that's when you need to add hops for the biotransformation to work with Saccharomyces. But then you can't pull your yeast, or you do, it's going to be full of hops. That's the cool thing about dry hopping a beer and then adding some Brettanomyces in the bottle, per se, too, which is really interesting. Our experience has been is that it doesn't need to be a full active fermentation. It can be, you can dry hop and then you bottle condition with the yeast. You're almost doing it reverse, you know, whereas with, I mean, I guess it's not reverse, but it's such a small amount of Brett that you typically bottle condition with also. But to me, it's one place where you can create some really great, unique flavors with Brett. And it could be on a sour beer. It could be like an Orval type beer.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up, the Orval.
And, you know, Jean-Marie Rock, the now retired brewmaster from Orval, that's what he spent his last 20 years focusing on is the glycoside effect, the biotransformation and dry hopping, and what is the Brett strains that Orval have. And it does tie in with what we're talking about to kind of loop it all together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bitter young hoppy beer that you have in Belgium. And then by the time we get it here in the United States, what do you think the classic, maybe if you could pick one probably from Vinny, that's like a more classic Brett expression beer, but the all-time classic Brett beer that you think about, it's Orval. Mm-hmm. But if you have it over there, no.
Orval, well, not so much.
No, so one of the wonderful things that I get to experience is because of being Ekumen Chief, we supply some of their hops, and they send us fresh Orval at Brow every year, and we also request a couple of cases of year-old Orval and six-month-old Orval, and it's just this wonderful spectrum of hangovers. I mean, delicious.
Yeah. It's always my first stop at Brow is the Yakima Chief booth to drink Orval.
Nice, yeah.
Because when it's fresh, it's beautiful and floral and light.
I've never had it fresh.
Orval days.
I'll bring you some back.
I once did a tasting at Orval with Jean-Marie Rock where we tasted like 2 week, 3 week, 4 week, and then like, you know, after 4 week, it was like 6 week, 8 week, and then 3 month, 4 month, 5 month, six, eight. Nine, and it was like 12 or 15. It was amazing to see, like, the beer is like a butterfly. It's changed in
so much changed.
A caterpillar to a butterfly, and it's just this metamorphosis of flavor. And a lot of that is the Brett developing, but, you know, there's also this really nice really bright citrus hop note when you drink really young, you know, and Orval. And so I think the discussion on the sour, you know, hopping with sour beers doesn't just have to be pigeonholed to, you know, specifically sour beer. It can be Brett finished beer. And on the same note, we just made our first kettle sour, this beer called She's So Italian. And so we did it with...
about Natalie?
No, actually, it's an Italian reference with Agostino from Birrificio Italiano.
Okay, so she's like the most Italian-looking woman in California, that's for sure.
But anyways, well, interesting is that, you know, I've used this hop load, if you will, hop addition, to get, you know, like 30 BUs in a beer. And then you add it to a beer that's been acidified in the kettle, and the pH is much lower, and the beer is only like 12 or 14 BUs. Yeah. So in a conventional blonde beer, we would be at 30 BUs. But in the environment of having high acidity, low pH, it was like 12 or 14. And it was beautiful. That's what we wanted. I mean, that was what I was hoping, and it worked.
Right.
And this goes back.
Armand said, I brew between my pinky.
Yeah.
And he crosses his fingers.
Yeah.
Those guys are great. This actually goes back to what we had the last episode we had with John Palmer talking about, that dropping pH and raising pH and changing the bittering. But now I'm interested to find out, Vinny, about the perceived bitterness on that beer. Because with the lower pH, even though the BUs are low, it has been pretty well, at least sensorily, anecdotally, and somewhat studied because it's sensory science, so it's a little difficult, established that with a lower pH and a good amount of acidity, the higher acidity, bitterness becomes accentuated. So a 15 BU beer actually might taste quite a bit more bitter than a 30 BU regular Kolsch or pale.
You think there's a perceived bitterness change?
This beer is probably not a good, you know, case study, if you will.
Okay.
Only because it's got a bunch of botanicals in it.
Yeah.
So it's just layered. It's got roses, violets, black pepper,
right,
honey. And so you get this sweetness from the honey, even though it's fermented out, and elderberry juice that's fermented out. And so it's the first time. I mean, it's still not a normal Russian River type beer, but I just, you know, we knew that it would be less bitter on paper, and it was, and thankfully flavor wise. But I wonder if all these botanicals weren't in it, it would be a different thing.
Okay. Be wary of wormwood for all of y'all out there. No. Just so you know,
I love wormwood in my absinthe.
Yeah, and beer it gets a bit rough.
Can I throw out just one crazy idea?
Yeah.
From sort of coming off our last conversation, which, just as a quick side note, you know, with so many great resources out there,
I'm going to get us to a quick break, but Jay
doesn't give me the tease it sign, which is him just looking at me.
Exactly.
Usually.
Sometimes I raise my eyebrows.
Yeah, he's doing it. He's giving me the look. So my question is, what do you guys think about this? And maybe it's a crazy idea, or I don't know if it's been thrown out before, but, you know, Vinny, you talked about with Brett beers or mixed culture beers, dry hopping, and then bottle conditioning with Brett. So one thing that I've been kicking around, and this is for after the break, but, you know, we've been talking about hop creep and increasing, you know, we can take a gravity sample on these beers that we heavily dry hop. And sometimes what a lot of brewers are reporting is about a one Plato pickup, which coincidentally, that's about how much sugar we add at bottle conditioning. So my teaser question is, could you dry hop a beer and then send it to bottles and it's a complete re-fermentation with just hop sugar?
Best
and we'll get to that question after the break. This is the sour. Oh, wait, no.
It was so close. It was going to be good. All right, all that and more on the Hop and Brew School podcast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Hop and Brew School podcast. Doing a nice long show for you today because we've got too many good guests in the studio to let them go, and we're having some good conversation. Jay, you had a little teaser for us before the break. Give us a recap and pose your question.
Justin, I'd like you to repeat the question.
I have no idea what you said. Yeah, I stared right through you.
Yeah, I know. That's like, if you guys have listened to the sour hour, that's what I do every time.
Yeah.
Scott's just like, tease it out, tease it out. And then he's like, we're 5 minutes in the next segment. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot that teaser.
Absolutely.
This time I remember, though. No, I was thinking about the apparent sugar pickup from adding these dramatic amounts of dry hops. And, you know, it's right around the amount of sugar that we add to our bottle conditioning usually.
Yeah.
So I posited that maybe you could count on that sugar for re-fermentation. But in the initial comments off air, we were skeptical. But what do you guys think?
So we covered this earlier in the Hop Creep episode, but it's become quite apparent that pickup, that up to one Play-Doh pickup, is and it is independent of volume of hops added, which really indicates that it is the residual non-fermentables from the malt in the wort that are being converted. Really, it's the enzymes from the hops that do it. So yeah. Hop Creep is enough to bottle condition. But the problem is you have to give the enzymes enough time to solubilize in solution and then react.
Because if you remove the hops, hop creep isn't as dramatic.
Correct. Or if you use cryo or extracts right. or oils, it doesn't occur to nearly the same extent. And so you can do it, but what I would encourage is that if you were trying to bottle condition, I would rely on that for about half of your CO2. So let that gas build up in tank at the very end, because at that point they're not going to produce enough any H2S or any uncomfortable nastiness. But that will condition a good amount of it, and it's going to create some pretty interesting things, and you're going to be able to retain your hop character from that carbonation. So it's the spunding via hops, basically, instead of carbonating with sugar. And then transfer it to your packaging line under pressure and through a filter or a centrifuge, because there's still going to be some hops in suspension and you don't necessarily want that.
Yeah, I think the hard thing would be based on your ideas that if you were a bottle condition brewery like you are, you would have to have the hops in the beer, because once you remove the hops, hop creep, I don't know if it totally goes away, but it's pretty significantly less. Is that net?
Right. And the enzymes
end up with this like ugly mess of hop pellets, or you could do, you know, you could float whole cone hops in your bottles like I used to do as a homebrewer. I put a hop leaf in every bottle of homebrew.
To do your bottle conditioning or to add flavor?
No, to add flavor.
Okay.
And the only thing that sucked was when you put a hop leaf in that was too big,
yeah.
and it like got stuck in the top. And then when you took the bottle cap off, there was no like psst. And then a minute later, you had like a
I see. Yeah, it was a plug.
Yeah, exactly.
So hop corks.
I think we call that craft, Vinny, isn't it? Is it like, you know, like you get that hop schmutz in there? No, but if you pre-carb it in your tank or something like that, or because it only takes a little bit of time for the hop enzymes to solubilize, because just being in the material isn't going to be enough to be a problem. They actually do enter solution, and then they start to react with the sugars. It'll take a little bit longer, and you're probably not going to get quite enough carbonation, but that's one of those things that you could absolutely do trials on.
I'd be worried about diacetyl.
We covered that one, too, and I need to talk to you about that after the show, sir.
It's like, you could, as a homebrewer, probably do that in your corny keg. Vent it off.
Yeah.
Right?
But I would recommend
just to
using
tie it back into homebrew.
I would recommend using a hop cage or a hop filter thing for that, because otherwise you're going to get a miss.
Yeah, but you could supplement it with your bottle conditioning sugars and see your way to perhaps packaging that beer faster with all necessary caution.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you still open it along the way and it has diacetyl, obviously, then you miss that boat anyway. So. But we don't always see,
wouldn't you
with
just
our heavy high hop, our heavy hop additions, we don't always see diacetyl.
No, so. that's a yeast health issue. It's not a hop issue. We've covered that earlier, and I can talk to you guys about that.
And in the bottle, if you just waited long enough, would the diacetyl go away?
It depends if the yeast is active and has enough sugars to operate on the diacetyl.
Okay.
It's just like, you know, if you make sour beer with Pedio, then and you don't have Brettanomyces, and then you bottle it, and there's the PDO has made diacetyl, which Pediococcus does. If you don't have active yeast, in this case typically it would be Brett, there's no yeast there, active yeast to clean up the diacetyl. So it's important to have some active yeast mm-hmm. if you know you're going to have diacetyl around.
Got
also,
it.
If you've done that, you have not been listening to the Sour Hour.
So you've never trialed this question that you're asking yourself. You're just hypothesis that you've had.
This is like real time hypothesis.
Yeah. I like it throughout. I'll do a quick tangent.
You're fine.
I've been thinking actually later. Not that much later. In about 20 minutes, mm-hmm. We're about to record our 100th episode of the Sour Hour.
Really?
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't know that.
That's correct. Today,
not that I would have done anything different. That is exciting.
You've already made fun of me today, so you filled your quota. But I think about now that I've been on the Brewing Network for a little while, and the proliferation of all these places to get beer information, what's our role in this, and what can our role be going forward? And I think I don't think about this in terms of advantage or not, but it's something that you get smart people in a room and you ask the big questions. And not that I like this comparison, but it's almost like the TED Talks with like the tech people. Which, again, that's why I don't like the comparison. But
it's okay.
You bring up big ideas. Not that my idea was that big of an idea, but like, let's talk about these fringe things while we're all here and kind
some of
walk
the theoretical side. Yeah,
and I think that's one of the main benefits of the podcast format, where you can have smart people in a room talk in real time, kind of think through it together.
Right.
Whereas some of the other things are more like reference based. So it's like, oh, if I want to know the cohumulon of this, I can look that up. Or if I want to know the pitching rate of doing a yogurt kettle sour, I can look up this or whatever it might be.
Right.
And I kind of like the idea of still doing those things, but like pivoting more towards the big ideas of, Vinny, you're trying this thing just today with the Quebec yeast and all this stuff. What are we driving towards? What's next, and what are the next big ideas, and what is the future of peak beer, as I'm starting to call it?
Like peak beer.
Just what's the best version of beer? It's all subjective, right?
Yeah.
But as I said before, I really like these barrel aged mixed culture IPA type beers, or American sour beers, heavily hopped, aged with a mixed culture or bottle condition in an interesting way. Hops, mixed culture, exploding with flavor that might not be stable and the same the whole time, but it's going to stay very interesting. Mm. I think that's what Goose and Lambic has had for a long time, and we're just scratching the surface of it.
And it's that persistence into interestingness, and that's what I absolutely love. And this is really why I was so thankfully you guys agreed to spend some of your time here with us today talking about this, is that, you have this wealth of experience and anecdotes and scientific studies and just having paid attention to all these things. It's a huge honor to have your input. And we will never, ever, ever forget that as brewers. I mean, Vinny, you took me in when I was you bothered to answer the damn phone.
And yeah, he's like, I just answered an email, bro.
I showed up with a buddy of mine who now has his own sour brewery.
He was meowing outside.
Is that a can of extract opening? I should come in for dinner. You spend time with people, and Jay, you've done the same thing. Like, you didn't know me from Adam, and I was a brewer at a different place, and you guys bothered to engage. And that has, and I know how busy it is being a brewer and how busy you guys are, and that's a huge compliment to...
All right, enough about them. What about me? I mean, really? I got to sit here and listen to this all night?
I was like, I actually ran into Justin once at Cascade 3 years ago, and I was like, it's Justin from the Brewing Network! And
I knew I recognized you from somewhere.
Who the F is this kid?
No. Was it Cascade or was it Sassy's? Be honest.
You're at Cascade.
They're right there.
They are right there.
Or was it Mary's?
Sassy's has one of the best tap lists ever.
Just check. It does.
Hey, Mary's is pretty good, too. They got a lot of good Ninkasi on there.
Yeah.
Justin, you are...
No. I'm going to get us out of here.
No, your time is coming. Your time is coming, sir.
We are up against a clock, but I do want to thank you guys for being here. Jay, thank you for giving me a new podcast idea, the Beer Think Tank.
It's a great idea, actually. The Bright Tank?
And honestly, what I like about it is... I just turn on the microphones, and listeners would just get to listen in on kind of what you're talking about, these theoretical discussions that brewers have over a couple of beers. No hosting, no presenting, no nothing. Just sit down and talk, and I'll record the damn thing.
Get the Twitch going.
Edit it later on.
Get some questions.
No, don't edit it, because we'll eventually start complaining about this valve seat or that valve seat. It's going to be value.
Right. All right. Well, I do want to thank everybody for being here. Vinny Chilurzo from Russian River, Jay Goodwin from The Rare Barrel, and Charlie Johnson from Ronin Fermentation Project, which is fairly new, right? You guys are only a couple years old?
Yeah, we're like a year old, basically.
Okay.
And
Where are you located?
We're in... Gray Eagle, California. We're an hour north of Lake Tahoe.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're actually under ice.
I didn't think anything was an hour north of Lake Tahoe.
Right? No. We're like in between 50-50 Brewing and Sierra Nevada Brewing.
Cool.
We're like right in between the two.
So a great stop along a six-hour journey.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Of course, you can go visit the Rare Barrel down in Berkeley. Their tasting room is open occasionally, I've noticed.
Sure.
The all-new facility in Windsor, Russian River's new brewery.
Oh, it's
which,
so beautiful.
I got to just pop my head in the guest shop, but we're going to do a recording up there soon. Yep. Of both my show, The Session, and Jay's show, The Sour
Hour. What's the first one?
So, you know. I'm gonna show you the numbers. You want to see the numbers of our shows, Jay?
Mm-hmm. I was going to say something, but I won't.
All right. This has been the Hop and Brew School podcast, of course. I want to thank you all for tuning in. If you want to ask questions or present topics, you can send that all to hopandbrewschool@thebrewingnetwork.com. That's hopandbrewschool@thebrewingnetwork.com. You can recommend guests on the show, topics, ask your questions, any of those things. Also, go check out Yakima Chief Hops at yakimachief.com. You can find all sorts of information, including about the real Hop and Brew School, not the podcast, but the actual Hop and Brew School, which is happening over Labor Day weekend this year. The Brewing Network will be there hanging out and doing whatever it is we do at those events, mostly drinking beer.
And providing information and being generally awesome for the beer industry. Come on, Justin.
That's what we'll be doing. All right. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back soon. Nick, good job today. Thanks for being here as well.
Always a pleasure, sir.
All right. Take care of yourselves and your beer.